FBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Truth and Justice. This is your Friday follow-up episode for this week's bonus, where I had on Kelsey German, who is the sister of one of the victims of the Delphi murders from 2017, Liberty German, on the show. We tried to not focus on the case. We've done that all too much. Kelsey certainly has done it all too much. So I really wanted to put some focus on to her sister Libby and onto Kelsey's life, because Kelsey has, you know, it's easy for the family members of victims to get lost in the shuffle of tragedies like this. This week, as I mentioned, Mike is out of town. He's out on assignment. And I do have Zach here. We're recording remotely. And we're also joined by our favoritest ever guest host, the one and only Miss Janet Varney. Hey, Janet.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me back. It's great to see you both.
We appreciate you being there. I guess I should let you say hi too, Zach.
Oh, hi, guys. I'm here as well.
We're all going to pretend like we haven't just been chatting together in the super exclusive Patreon feed.
Yeah, if you're not on Patreon, you just missed a 40-minute pre-show conversation before we got started on the video. We are going to be doing a YouTube live video for this one, so hopefully it won't be too clunky. We've done it before successfully, so we've got some questions that have come in from social media that Janet will be asking, and then we also will have the live questions coming in from YouTube, hopefully. So right after break, we're going to go ahead and get started.
Texas Ranger James Holland is a legendary interrogator. They call him the serial killer whisperer.
You can't hide those indications, and that's why yesterday I knew that you did it.
But now, shocking interrogation tapes reveal how the super cop really operates.
And that's why they asked me to come in, because I'm special.
From Something Else, The Marshall Project, and Sony Music Entertainment, this is Smokescreen. Just say you're sorry. Listen and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So this first note is from Kirsten. She says, first of all, Bob, I appreciate the unique interview and novel questions you posed to Kelsey. I just love your constant empathy and that you gave her the chance to speak about not only her sister, but also her life and the effect that this tragedy has imposed. And Jeanette actually shares a similar sentiment. She said, my heart extra breaks for Kelsey and the nonsense she's had to deal with from ignorant, judgmental fools. I'm so glad she's been able to find some happiness in her life. And then shout out to Jeanette, because she also got excited that I was going to be a part of the show today and that she's a fan of my podcast, The JV Club, which is lovely and a very sweet and great thing to say in addition to those great comments. And I have to say, I agree with both of these ladies for sure. Kirsten has a question for you. Before you just take the compliment and roll with it, there is
Can
a question.
Take a few minutes to soak in the compliment?
Soak it in. You know what? Soak it in. Let's just have awkward silence while you soak it in.
I've absorbed the compliment.
Okay, good.
And what's the question?
Well, actually, I mean, that's, if you want, this, we could sort of talk about what the three of us thought about the conversation, which, like I said, I totally agreed.
What did you guys think of the episode? It was a little different from most of her interviews, I think.
It was really nice to hear her talk about the outside of that. Not so much the case, you know, because like you said, we've delved into the case so much over and over and over again, and we all have our opinions on the case, but to actually hear about Libby, to hear about Kelsey, to hear the true stories, the stories behind them that make them who they are, is really nice to hear.
Absolutely. And I loved, it just made me feel, and that's very selfish, to feel better about Kelsey's situation in her life, hearing her say this, but I just loved the wisdom and the kind of older than her years recognition of knowing that her sister would want her to be happy and to live. Mm-hmm. And that's something that when we lose someone, and for those of us who have lost someone, I'm sure that's many of us, that's a thing that people tell you and you can't kind of absorb it all the time. And the sort of the guilt is so powerful that it sort of pushes that thought out of your mind and you don't accept it. And it's so important to accept that. And I just, that for me was my favorite part of the whole interview, was her saying, you know, it doesn't matter what strangers on the internet say about right. me getting engaged. My sister wanted me to be, she wants me to be happy. She wants me to live a beautiful life. What would be more disappointing to Libby than for her sister to just sort of be a ghost? Like, no, you know? So that for me was very moving, and I was so proud of her, and I just was very excited.
I love the little side story too about swimming and how she wanted to, you know, the coach made her swim her events and how much she just hated doing it.
The team has to stay in the pool and wait for her to finish. Oh, I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah.
As everyone's fingers are turning into little prunes, but they still were so supportive and I love it.
Yeah. She, you know, Kelsey is, I met her at CrimeCon last year. We were on a panel together. And I've been dying to do this interview with her because she was talking a lot about the panel was on ethics and true crime reporting. And she had a lot to say about that. But I just caught little things in her presentation where she had mentioned something like she had gotten engaged and no one, it was like I was sitting in the audience and no one cared. Like people were just like, get past that. We want to hear more about your sister. And I talked to her for a little bit afterwards and she's not only done a great job of finding that inner peace or, you know, as much as you can, like you talked about Janet, but she's doing that while still being an incredible, amazing advocate for her sister. If any of you don't follow Kelsey on Twitter, you should, because she just, I mean, every day she shares old videos and photos of Libby and stories plus updates, you know, with things that are going on in the case. So she's just an amazing human being, and she's going to do great things. I know she is with her degree and her career moving forward.
For sure. Well, let's get to Kirsten's question, a little unrelated, but wants to know what everybody thought about the Super Bowl halftime show. She says she's 38 years old. She loved it.
All right. So let's before we go too far, Janet, what did you do during the Super Bowl?
Okay. Here's the thing. It's going to sound like my excuse is like a shame on everyone else. First of all, I don't know if I've ever seen a Super Bowl. I'm just not a football fan. I like basketball. I was excited because I knew Super Bowl happening where I live in LA. So I felt like everything was going to be crazy and all focus would be on the Super Bowl. So I took myself for a hike because I knew no one would be out and I was correct. But even from the hills that I, above like Hollywood, I could hear all the cheering. So I sort of felt like I knew when when the Rams right. did well. But to be honest with you, and again, no shame on anybody who loved and enjoyed the Super Bowl. You mentioned it at the beginning of the episode with Kelsey. But I listened to your interview with Kelsey instead. And then I went back and I listened to the prosecutor's coverage of Delphi. And so it kind of became like a Libby and Abby day for me. And it was, and I loved it. So again, please, everyone have watched the Super Bowl and loved it. I'm not like, and I spent my time, you know, but it was a really contemplative, lovely way to sort of revisit that. And your interview with Kelsey was sort of the way in for me. So I loved it. Super Bowl halftime show, no comment.
You really put me in my place on that one. Thanks.
Don't you dare. All my excuses out on front. How dare you?
Zach was going to be like, haha, you're a loser. You went for a hike during Super Bowl. I'm a little bummed because, by the way, today is Janet's birthday. She's 29 years old today. As you can, if any quick little Google search will show you.
I will say that I have my text bubble on my laptop showed up and guess who it's a happy birthday from? Jimmy Pardo, your best friend. It says happy birthday, my dear friend.
Tell him I said hello. Jimmy Pardo, for those of you that don't know, is the reason I'm a podcaster.
And the reason that Bob and I know each other.
Mm-hmm. Yep, from our mutual love of Jimmy Pardo's podcast, which is not true crime at all.
Not true crime at all.
I've told the story before, but I was a religious listener of the Jimmy Pardo's Never Not Funny podcast, where I heard Janet on many times. And when Serial came out, Jimmy was bitching about how everyone was talking about Serial as though it was the first podcast ever. And so finally I was like, I need to listen to this. What the hell is Serial? I had no idea what it was when I listened. I didn't know it was about true crime. I didn't know anything. I thought it was another comedy podcast. All I know is Jimmy was always talking about it. So I went and listened to it. And then that ended up launching my career as a podcaster.
Which is proof positive that no press is bad press because he was bitching about it and it still got right. you into it. So he really shot himself in the foot on that one.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And now I'm competing with him for downloads.
That's right. That's right. Okay. Your thoughts about Super Bowl halftime. Also, quick follow-up from Kirsten. What are our thoughts on the ridicule the 50 Cent has been subjected to about his weight?
Okay. First, now Zach, I thought, now Zach is right in that age range. where he would like it. I thought it was hilarious. Janet, are you aware of who was performing at the Super Bowl?
I mean, from context clues.
I'm leaving. I'm leaving.
So it was all of the gangster rappers that we enjoyed through high school. You and I are about the same age. Through like high school. So it was Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg and Mary J. Blige. And then they had 50 Cent. And I don't know Kendrick Lamar.
Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah. I'm out of touch with the younger stuff. So I didn't know who he was. But like all, like every party I went to in high school was like on that stage. It was
awesome. For sure.
How did you forget the last one?
Oh, and Eminem. Eminem was there too.
Yeah, okay.
That's some Inglewood love right there.
Yeah, I felt like Eminem was lip syncing, though. I don't know how you felt about that.
I don't think he was. I didn't feel like he was.
A couple times he took the mic away from his face, and he was still singing.
Oh no, that's lip syncing 101. Don't take the mic away.
I don't know.
Could have been background singers, but it was funny. Was as I mentioned in the Patreon video at the beginning. Every Wednesday, I play poker with my dad and a group of his friends. So these guys are all 70 plus years old and me playing cards. And last week they were all having a temper tantrum about the stupid Super Bowl halftime show and what is this garbage in there? They're going to lose.
Yeah, there was a lot of that.
I was so excited. I rarely post on social media, and posting is like boomers don't realize they're not the target demographic anymore.
Yeah.
And us 90s kids, it's our time to shine, brother.
That's right.
Here we
go.
That's
right. You got it.
That was phenomenal. Actually, my wife was up dancing in the living room and embarrassed the shit out of our kids, which was amazing. they learned a whole bunch about their mom that day.
Right. As many kids of Gen X and Zennials learned. Same thing. We were all over it. So what did you think about the actual? I felt like I hyped it up in my mind a little too much. That it fell a little bit short for me, but I did love it. But I wanted it to be longer.
But there was nuance in there that I don't know if you caught without being like a big time fan. Like when Dre sat down at the piano, he played the beginning of a Tupac song. And they also came out.
No, I didn't know that.
They also came out to California Love, which is a Tupac song. Like they did a lot of little nuance things. They were amazing. Like, I loved it. Yeah. I thought it was phenomenal. I mean, I was goosebumps watching it. It was amazing for me.
The best part for me was the very beginning when Dre came out and introduced Snoop Dogg.
Yes.
And they started singing, what's the name of the song? It's one of my favorite Snoop songs.
I can't think of the name of it off the top of my head now. But
yeah, Next Episode? Is it called The Next Episode?
That's a Dr. Dre song, I think. You put me on the spot. Now I seem stupid, even though
ding, 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 ding. That one.
Yeah, that's the next episode. Yeah,
that's what he started with.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's also Snoop Dogg. You should be ashamed of yourself. But when that beat dropped and that, I don't know, was 100,000 people in the stadium, mm-hmm. like that beat dropped, which is like every high school party we were at. And 100,000 people erupted. It was just like chills.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Now, when Eminem came out to Lose Yourself, that was big. They were joking about that, like the players in the locker room listening to it. They're like, Matt Stafford's going to come out and throw for 500 yards and 6 TDs now after listening to that.
Yeah. So some nuance there, Janet, is Matt Stafford was Michigan boys. Matt Stafford played for the Lions for, what, 13 years?
12, uh-huh. Yeah.
And the Lions, 12 years. The Lions are awful. He's always been a good quarterback that could never win a game because he was the Lions.
Yeah.
And he moved to the Rams and then took him to the Super Bowl and
there
won
you
it.
Go.
And Eminem, also from Detroit.
Sure, so, sure.
Yeah. So it was pretty cool. I liked it. I was really hoping it would be a little longer, and I was hoping that maybe there would be like more of like a big mashup medley to, you know, the problem was, too, it was a day game, so it was hard to really set an ambiance. In L.A., it was still, like, daylight, because I was sure. Like, man, if it was dark and they had lighting going on and stuff, and they didn't have any of that stuff. But I really, really liked it. The funny thing about 50 Cent was...
I'm so glad you knew to come back to that. I was so genuinely worried. I was like, Kirsten, her question, Kirsten!
Right.
You came back. That was all. You really swept back around to that. I'm very proud.
Right. I'm a professional. I do this every week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, if any of you watching right now are thinking, why are we spending so much time talking about football? You guys need to ask more questions. You asked like 5 questions.
Well, we have some more questions, but that's what we started out with.
Right. But the funny thing is, so 50 Cent comes down, like he's hanging upside down like he was in his old music video, mm-hmm. and comes down. And the first thing I said to Becky was, I'm like, oh, 50's still looking healthy. Like he's looking strong. Mm-hmm. And then I look all over social media and people are all saying 50, more like 350, because he used to be like super duper ripped back in the day.
Yeah.
But he's taking all kinds of shit for not looking like that he did when sucks. He was 20.
You know, I don't That's think so he unfair. Gained as much weight as people think. I just think that opening pose was really unflattering. And I think that's more so when he was upright, he didn't look as big. And I think a lot of the we'll call weight gain is muscle gain. Like if you really looked at him, he was big. He wasn't fat. He was big. And I just think that first opening upside down was just super unflattering. And that's what made it look so bad.
Yeah, it wasn't great. But it was just funny because I had such a completely different take. I'm like, damn, 50's ripped.
Yeah.
And then everybody was like, 50's fat. And I'm like, which in the over, the, more importantly, like, why are we even having a conversation about people's weight? Like, give them a break.
For sure.
Or as I like to say, shut the fuck up.
Sure.
And with that, what's our next question, move on? Janet?
Let's move on. Lynn says, I recall early in the investigation, police said they believed Libby and Abby were at the bridge to meet someone they may have met online. Now they finally release the Anthony Schatz account information in the state and state that account was the last contact Libby received on her phone. Any clue as to why they held that information close to the vest for 5 years? Did they, have they definitively said that, or?
I think it's like assumed, but I don't think it, I haven't actually heard that they said it. Yeah.
And Kelsey didn't say that either when you guys did touch on it very briefly. I think that might be like a rumor.
Yeah, I don't know. I saw Lynn had posted that, so she may have read it somewhere. It may be true. As far as I know, all they have said is that it's important to the investigation. And I thought it was, you know, Kelsey was not cryptic, really, but she was. I think she went out of her way to make a point that, from what she knows from the investigators, that account is very important.
I'm gonna have to come in and be the big old downer that I've been on this case, because I truly do not believe that count is as important as people are making it out to be, even with the family. Because I've seen other things from the family that say he has no involvement. But there's no way that if he is truly involved, the Keegan Anthony Klein, if he is truly involved, there's no way they're letting him be interviewed on HLN. That account has had contact with them. They're trying to follow up other things with that account, but I don't think that account has anything to do with the murders.
Yeah, I don't know, but it's interesting you say that, because I'm optimistic about it. Maybe it's false optimism, but it's the first time we've seen the police say that something was important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their MO for 5 years has been some rumor, somebody gets arrested, and them saying, you know, stop starting rumors, basically.
Did you see Carter's press release after he was on Good Morning America?
No, I didn't.
His press release literally said, we are so close to figuring this out. We only need one more piece to tie this together, the person's identity. I mean, it's literally the most lame. I mean, like, he just put it all out there that they have no idea. You know, he went on Good Morning America and just over and over again said, we're this close, we're this close, we're this close. And they're walking in circles. I hate to say it. I want this case to be solved. This case is near and dear to me. We live close to here. And I hate being a downer on this, but something
no,
has
you're
to
not, I mean, you're not being
come
a downer.
Through.
I think you're also you do have the series of things that happen that feel like maybe they're leading to something, and then it's quiet for a long time. And so I think it's totally rational to sort of go, I'll believe it when, mm-hmm. you know, this, it feels more precise. Also, just listening to the prosecutors, I'm not saying that they're, you know, dead right about everything, but I thought they gave such thoughtful analysis of everything that happened as they understand it. And so and having just re-listened to it, it just doesn't seem, not to say that this is what everyone is saying, but it definitely still just does not seem to me like they went to meet someone. Now, whether or not it could be that he was sort of stalking their plans on social media based on, you know, having had that contact, or maybe that's the way in which it's significant, might be different. But there's just so many unknowns.
I think we just have to be really careful, because every time a new suspect comes out, that everybody jumps on that train of that suspect is the person. I mean, we've seen it over and over again in this case. Now it's the Keegan Anthony Klein. Everybody's it's got to be him. You know, 6 months ago, it was that Chadwell guy, and everybody was like, it's got to be Chadwell. You know, so something has to break soon. But I'm just worried that people are kind of, you know, going overboard with this.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it, there's a couple things. I'm encouraged by the fact that the family and the police are saying it's important, which makes me feel like they have some sort of lead on it. I'm encouraged by the fact that Kelsey, who has the inside information from the police, is comfortable and confident in what they're doing, because that's been a big problem of mine. Is it's hard to have confidence when we don't know what the hell they're doing, and it's been unsolved for 5 years.
Right.
So that's good. But then again, you know, I've said before, based on what we know, it's just very difficult to profile a scene when you don't know the details, like cause of death or how the girls were left or anything like that. But it seems to me that it's likely that the girls weren't targeted, that they were victims of opportunity. I've always thought that someone went out there with the intention of,
right.
But again, we don't know if they were sexually assaulted or anything, but let's just say, for example, they were, that, you know, maybe they went out there with the intention of cornering someone and sexually assaulting them. And then that's just who, because it would seem odd that someone would target two girls. You know, two is a much more difficult crime to pull off than one. But you know, there's just, I don't know, there's just so many unknowns out there. I hope that one way or another, they just get this thing wrapped up, because it just seems so unlikely also that whoever did this hasn't done it again or isn't going to do it again. This is not the type of personality that commits a crime like that. Isn't a one and done type of person.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's move on to Ashley. This takes us over to the West Memphis 3. She says, with regards to the West Memphis 3, if the local prosecutor and judge deny further testing, can the issue be brought to a higher level court?
Yeah, definitely can. And just some update on that. It's not a big update, but I did talk to Steve Braga yesterday, who is Damien's attorney. So he has a series of attorneys. Braga, I believe, is out of New York, and he's kind of the main one that works on the case. And then you have to have an Arkansas attorney to file anything in the Arkansas court, and that's Patrick Banka. I was talking to Steve yesterday, and he said that they are about ready to file what he worded as a very strong response to the state's motion. So, you know, last week when I broke down the state's response, where they're essentially saying, you can't claim habeas corpus because there's no body in prison, so that's silly. And then this can't prove actual innocence. Plus, we don't know if MVAC is an accepted science, which I did talk to Steve last week and connected him with Jared Bradley,
nice.
Who we had the show a couple weeks ago, who is the CEO of MVAC. So he can give him all of the – because there's case law. There's two types of hearings. There's a Frye hearing, and in some states use a different type, and I'm – it escaped me last week. It's escaping me again, the name of that hearing. But essentially, that is where the court reviews a certain science to determine if it is an acceptable science to be used in court.
Hmm.
And MVAC has passed that on multiple occasions and has been accepted in the courts. So I connected him with Jared so that they can include that information in the response. But, you know, it was pretty jarring to read that how sure the prosecutor, Keith Cressman, seemed that this was absurd to be even asked for,
right,
the way he wrote his motion. So I was encouraging to me to hear from Steve that, you know, basically they're not scared at all of what he wrote, and they're about to hammer him in their response.
Good.
So that should be coming soon. He told me he'll copy me on it as soon as they get it done, so I'll have my hands on it probably before it gets filed with the court, and we'll be sure to update you guys on that. But to answer the question, yes, if the circuit court judge denies the request to do the DNA testing, then yeah, they can appeal it up to the state, and I believe even federal level, because I believe they had to do that back in 2002 and 2007 for some testing. They had to appeal it to get the right to do that first round of testing. So we'll keep you updated, but it was encouraging for me to hear Steve so sharply say that they are sending out a strong response that we should be getting here, I would assume, in the next week or two.
Great. I mean, I have to say, I still am surprised, even as a, again, I don't live in this world professionally or anything like that, but even just having followed your podcast for years and seen over and over, time and again, district attorneys who are so glib and happy to say, like, listen, if you've got anything, and the fact that that flips so quickly and immediately is just like the absolute opposite, two-faced, like, oh, right. you didn't, like, I'm still surprised by that, which just shows how naive I am, because this has happened to you. I mean, Philip in the YouTube chat has a question about Sandy Melgar, is another perfect example. The DAs that are so comfortable saying, like, listen, we're all about the pursuit of truth. That's all we're about. And then anything that comes in the direction of, like, well, then we're going to challenge because we have the truth, or we want the truth. And then it's like as if that conversation never happened. It makes me so sick. And I applaud you for keeping it together as much as you do, because I continue to be like gobsmacked by it. Like, what you said? Like, calm down, Janet. Calm down.
Well, and this one, it's so bad because, you know, I've gotten to where I'm not surprised by that, but, like, I'm even shocked by what we've dealt with Cressman to go say, yeah, sure, all we want is the truth. If you guys want to do testing, we're happy to do it. To go from that to, the problem is all the evidence is gone. It's been lost and destroyed, so we can't. And then, oh, you're suing us? Oh, just kidding. We do have the evidence. It's here. Okay, well, now we want to test it. You're being ridiculous for wanting
That's
to test
clown
it.
That's clown town. Like, that's clown town behavior. It's insane.
It's absolutely nuts. That, I mean, I'm hoping that we get a massive smackdown from a judge. Yeah, I'm hoping for a ruling, obviously, in our favor to do the testing, but it sure would be nice to get a ruling that not only approves the testing, but also admonishes the Keith Cressman specifically and Scott Ellington, because he also promised we could test it and package it and then disappeared for their actions, that they are in no way seeking truth and justice in any way, shape, or form.
No.
And to answer Philip's question in the YouTube chat, we really don't have anything new on Sandy Melgar. I'll definitely, as I tell you, I know a lot of people are always asking for updates on cases, and that's fine. You can keep doing that, but just know that if there's any notable update, I will always tell you right away. And it was Sandy's case. I know that Zellner's still working on the case. Liz is still working real hard on the case. And the CIU in Harris County has it. I know they're working together. I think they were doing some testing of some kind. But nothing notable has transpired in her case so far.
Is she okay? How's she doing? How's her health?
The last I talked to Liz, she was doing better. I think she was having some health issues, last year, but she seems to be doing better. But I haven't talked to her about it super recently, so I can't speak as far as what I've talked to Liz recently, but we haven't really talked about how her mom's doing health wise right now. But last I knew, she was doing better, but, you know, she's got a ton of health issues, and prison isn't the place to be when you have those kind of problems, and we need to get her home.
Absolutely. Real quick. You pulled these questions. Let's not pretend that that's not the case, because Malu Florin, a.k.a. Good Luck from Instagram, did say some very nice things and some fun things about Cora crossing over to Truth and Justice, and that they're very excited, and hopefully that I will be making sure there are no wrongful convictions in Republic City. Anybody who doesn't know that show, feel free to ignore everything that was just said, but shout out to you. Excited to be part of this kooky crossover, and very honored to be here. And I feel like we're not letting you get a word in edgewise, Zach. Any thoughts you want to throw out there about West Memphis 3 or Sandy before we
move on
to this next question?
I think we are all spot on so far. I mean, my kids are real excited that you're here, so that's a good thing.
Great. I can't wait to hug them in person. Hopefully that will happen sooner than later. Oh,
they would love that.
For those of you that don't know, Janet is the voice of Cora, which many of your children might watch, but and it seems to span a wide range of ages, because last year, my 16-year-old son asked you for, I don't remember, you signed something for him to give to his girlfriend, for his birthday, because they're huge fans as well. What's funny is, so I pulled that question and put it in there for you, and I put the Instagram handle and then put good luck, because it looked hard to pronounce.
I thought that was part of their handle.
No.
Okay, it turns out Malu Florin does not translate into good luck. That's just that's just Bob Ruff being a jerk. Good to know.
You had no issues whatsoever pronouncing it.
Cut to me later today when someone's like, I'm off to take my big test. And I'm like, Malu Florin. Right. You had to be there. Right. Okay. Now, here's an interesting question from KQT105. I guess that's a person and not a radio station, but from Instagram, who says, I'm waiting for the new case. I really want to get through this without laughing. KQT105 says, I'm waiting for the new case. I haven't listened in months. Do you have an ETA?
Well, oh my goodness.
I do. Seems like KT1Q85, whatever their name is, isn't going to hear this because they're not listening. So perhaps I should respond on Instagram. But yeah, the new season, we're, as I said last week, for those of you that are listening, it's nice of them to write in and let me know they're not listening. I appreciate that.
I just had something like that recently, by the way, where someone was like, do you think you'll ever do video podcasts? I lost interest years ago.
Like, thank you. First weekend in March, we plan to launch season 12. As I mentioned, we have, Mike is gone this week. And then next week, I'm actually filming for, I can't really share the details about it yet, but I'm doing a project on one of our cases that we've covered. So that kind of got dropped on me, and I've got to do 3 days of filming. So giving us a little bit of a breather. And then beginning of March, first weekend in March, is the target date for episode one of season 12. And I'm hoping to get a trailer out sometime soon.
Okay. We do have a slew of, suddenly there was a buzz of activity on YouTube. You want to jump into some of these?
Sure.
Okay. So after Philip's great question about Sandy, we hear from Valeria, who is saying, I have started listening to the new Murderville podcast about Charles Raby, so it made me think about Jennifer again. Do you have any news on her case?
Unfortunately, I don't. Since we moved on to Pablo after Jennifer's case, I haven't heard anything from anybody connected to the case, and I haven't seen any filings. I keep my eye out in Harris County to see if there's any new filings, but... again, if I see any updates on anything that's significant, I will definitely let you guys know.
So I'm going to jump in for a second and ask a question myself with the Jennifer Jeffley case. With the way the season went down, have you had any backlash from the family or supporters?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, some of the supporters that brought the case to me, I do have kind of contact with them, but they kind of got pushed out of it too. You know, when Jennifer family brought in her attorney, who's a great guy, seems like he's doing a good job, but you know, he very much wanted to keep everything locked in, and so some of even the supporters that were helping her beforehand are kind of got pushed to the outside. So it's really, things right now are really locked up between the family and the attorney. Mm-hmm. And I think like nobody really knows anything, but no, I haven't got anything negative from them. It was just, you know, when I told them, okay, you know, if we're not going to have access to Jennifer, then we're going to, you know, we've gone as far as we can go. And they said, you know, we appreciate your work. And that was it. And hopefully they appreciated our work, because I haven't heard a word from them since then.
Hmm. Well, we hope for the best. Chuck has a lot to say. It's all great. I'm just going to kind of quickly paraphrase and just say, you know, he's saying he's really feeling that lack of accountability, not just on the side of the DA, but also just the whole system in general. This idea of, you know, maybe people get into the grind and they lose sight of the importance of it. This is now me. I'm totally going off script from what Chuck said, but hopefully I'm sort of still paraphrasing. But just the idea of like, you know, oh, it's just a job. You get sort of desensitized to stuff. Maybe, you know, mm-hmm. you start making choices that are more about you and your career than are about the people that you're either defending or prosecuting, the system that you're a part of. And just he's really feeling the weight of that accountability being, you know, not really being there in his mind.
And I wish there was somehow we've got to make, other than, you know, so many podcasters and documentarians and YouTubers that are now calling these people out, which I think is helping. I genuinely think that it's helping, that we're shining a light on some of this. But there has got to be some accountability within the system. More so than there is now, you know, in these next couple of bonus episodes. So this week we have a guy that was went to prison very young and was actually sentenced to double the maximum sentence by a judge making an example of him as a teenager, who is doing a lot now, finally got clemency and is doing a lot now for prison reform. The next week, we have a guy that's from our local area who was a crooked cop. He'll tell you he was a crooked cop.
I'm so interested in this. I have been really looking for it. I mean, I know it's not the next season, so I shouldn't be listening, but I've really enjoyed all the guests that you've had in between seasons. God forbid I enjoy all of your special guests who aren't part of the new season. I shouldn't have been listening. But anyway, yeah, I can't wait. That sounds like it's going to be fascinating.
I would say, knowing the story, I mean, I'm you know, being local and knowing his story and knowing the other side of the story, I'm really excited to hear what you come up with in a conversation with him.
It's amazing. I just talked to him last night, so I've recorded the interview. It's over an hour, and it ended at an hour because it would just seem too long to keep going. But it was fascinating for him to, I mean, he's coming out and telling us all of the things that he did as a cop that were illegal.
That's extraordinary. I mean, wow.
And there's a great story that goes with it. Somebody that was wrongfully convicted because of him that got released, and, you know, without giving too much of it away, you know, he ended up switching places with the guy and he went to prison and the other guy got out.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's an insane story. But we really got into talking about, because the main reason I wanted to have him on was to talk about what causes that. Certainly you didn't become a cop because you wanted to be a crooked cop. You had the best intentions. Like, what happens? And he does a great job of explaining, you know, from his own perspective at least, but I think it really translates to a lot of the, you know, kind of what Chuck was saying here or what you said for him, Janet.
Sorry, Chuck.
But, you know, how, you know, you get so caught up in the system and the things that incentivize you within the system that you lose track of the reason that you took the profession on to begin with. So that'll be, again, so this week is the guy that was in prison. It's going to be talking about some prison reform things. And then next week is going to be the guy that was the crooked cop, and he's going to be on. So we're going to be shining a light on a lot of what you're talking about here, Chuck.
That's great.
And Janet.
That's great. And just quick shout out to Montana Sky Forever. Great handle. Love Montana. And you're joining from the Philippines, so you're rad on both counts. Hello, hello.
Nice. I don't know much about the Philippines, but I tell you that Montana is my all-time favorite place.
No, that's where you want to retire, I seem to remember you saying very recently.
Mm-hmm. I'm going there in May for a backpacking hunting trip, and I'm taking wife and kids there. This summer is going to be our family vacation. We've got an Airbnb on a lake up near Kalispell, Montana. Northwest Montana is my favorite. That's my mecca.
I love the Tetons.
I don't know if I've been to the Tetons.
Well, you know, it's like Jackson Hole, that area.
Right.
But
yeah,
I will say, I went there for the solar eclipse, which was amazing. But everyone there is white and has a golden retriever. No shade on being white or having a golden retriever, but I literally have never seen more golden retrievers being walked by white people in my entire life. I was like, oh no, you have to get a golden retriever if you live here.
Also not Montana, but it's okay.
Right. I'm saying, like, it's not Montana. I love the Grand Tetons in Wyoming, like, is what I mean. Yeah. Wyoming and Idaho and parts of Idaho are where the Tetons
There's
are,
a lot that just happened there that shocked me. One was Zach's geography knowledge that he just flexed on us both.
I'm not saying I think Jackson is in Montana. I tend to lump some of those beautiful kind of glacier and Grand Teton national parks in the same, like,
I'm like, there's a whole national park between Montana and Jackson Hole. You know that, right?
I cannot wait to listen to your schooling everyone on geography class. No, I am excited for that podcast.
Janet's going to punch me in the throat.
That's great. I'm going near that area, though, in the fall. I'm making another trip back in October into eastern in the Missouri Breaks area of Montana.
Oh, nice.
North of Jackson Hole.
And Jackson Hole, by the way, is in Wyoming, Zach. I don't know if you knew that, but
You know what? I knew that. I wasn't sure.
I don't know why you knew that. What a weird thing for you to know.
I've been
he
there.
He didn't understand what a five-letter word was when we were talking about Wordle earlier. Now he's dropping geography on us.
We've got some
shout outs to Zach's Twitter getting dropped off from episodes. Apparently Bob is now not promoting Zach's Twitter anymore. Not sure what that's about.
Couple things.
Anything you want to add?
Zach doesn't do Twitter.
I despise Twitter. I absolutely despise Twitter.
That might explain it.
He only does Instagram. And it's because when we made our credits, which I need to update because we have new transcribers and some of the transcribers aren't there anymore. When we make the credits, well, there's a different set of credits for the follow-up episodes, which Zach is on, and the main credits, which Zach is not on. So it seemed like it was better to put Zach's Twitter Instagram handle, which is at Z to the Q, clever, on the follow-up episodes where he actually appears.
All right, that's fair.
Thanks, Janet.
I mean, there's some stuff coming in. Most of it is just lovely and wonderful people from all over, like Karen in the UK. I will say that Rena says that Zach thinks Colorado has many deserts, but it actually auto-corrected to Zap, and I am real tempted to start calling you Zap.
That's
I am fighting so hard not to start nicknaming you Zap, because I like it. It's real cute. Can I call you Zap?
Absolutely.
Okay, this is going to be great, Zap. All right. You'll find I also say your name more often for some reason.
Also, I don't think I ever said Colorado. I said Georgia. I always said Georgia.
Oh, because of being in the desert. Yeah. Yes.
Right.
This can't be in Georgia because you've been in that desert. I'm excited about this next season. I barely know anything, but I'm very excited about this upcoming season.
I'm dying to get back into it. You know, I've had a lot.
I can't wait to start listening to the podcast again. You know what I mean? It's like finally a new season.
Right. Once we get back in the new season, sadly, IG, for whatever that person's handle was, won't know when we start, because I'll announce it, you know, on the podcast.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
When we're getting ready to start. So, Zap and Janet, this has been awesome. I think we've exhausted our questions. Is there anything else that you had on your outline, Janet?
It sounds like that you have some news that you said that you wanted to get into towards the end. Real quick before we do that, I'll just say that Judy said, you know, all your work on West Memphis 3 was so great. The documentary was so great. Any chance of anything like that cropping up? I think you did mention that you were going to be appearing on something. You filmed something. Maybe you weren't able to say more, but didn't you kind of bring that up recently, that you were going to be on something?
Yeah, I'm filming something. It's not about the West Memphis 3 case. However, I will tell you that I'm working on continuing the docuseries right now. And that's
nice.
It's as Janet knows, that's a process between producers and networks and all that stuff. We'll see. Hopefully that's going to be coming soon. The news is, this is a little, so hopefully you guys have enjoyed Janet on the show today. After 6.5 years, man, I'm going to get emotional about this.
Me too. Seriously.
Yeah, this is rough.
Wow. Didn't see that coming, especially not live on YouTube.
We all love it. You got such a big heart.
Okay. I need to catch my breath for a minute so I can do this.
If you cry, I'm going to cry.
I'm already doing it. All that happened was you welled up, and I immediately was like, uh-oh, here we go. Yeah. Here we go.
Okay. So, after 6.5 years, Mike has had a new opportunity come up for him, and he has decided to move on from NBI Studios, which, as you can hear, if you're watching this on YouTube Live, you've already seen me breaking down for 5 minutes talking about it. This week, this was just a vacation, so that's why he's not here this week, as I said. But it was just this past weekend, when he talked to me, we had a long conversation, and I 100% fully support what Mike's doing. He's doing what's best for him and his family. And like I said, man, I did not see this coming.
Everyone loves you the more for it, Bob. They do.
Yeah. So for those of you listening to this on audio, it's going to sound all broken up. I'm very emotional.
God damn it.
This is embarrassing. I can't get the words out. Here we go.
Don't you dare. Don't you be embarrassed. How dare you?
Janet's such a better friend than I am, because I'm like, come on, dummy.
Quit being a baby.
Again, I went on a hike and listened to podcasts instead of going to the Super Bowl. So we can't both be like that, Zach. Zap. Okay. Zap.
I had my emotional breakdown Saturday when he told me, so.
Yeah.
I got a text and I started crying.
Yeah. Ugh. I did too, so I thought I had it out of my system. All right, here we go. Here we go.
You got this, buddy.
So I'm going to stop trying to articulate this anymore because as people on YouTube are seeing, I'm getting very emotional about it. But Mike is moving on. It is a good move for him. We both had a lot of emotions about it. As you can tell, I still have them, and so does he, I'm sure. But next week is going to be Mike's last follow-up. He's here with me through the end of the month. It'll be his last follow-up episode, and then he is starting his new adventure on March 1st. He's still going to be sticking around part-time to help edit for a while we make some of these transitions. But so the good news is, with Mike being gone, surrounded by some great people, and I had already reached out to Janet to host this week's follow-up, and Janet is a great friend, and she's helped us out whenever we needed it. And I asked Janet if she would be willing to become the new permanent host of our Friday follow-up episodes, and she has graciously accepted. And Janet, I'm going to let you take it from here because I can't go on anymore.
Oh my gosh. Well, I just want to say gracious is not an appropriate word, and Bob knows it's not, because I lost my mind. At first I was like, I felt like so sad that Mike was moving on, because he's just such a part of the follow-up and the podcast in general, and such a dear, sweet, wonderful person. And I immediately was like, oh no, I'm such a yakky yak hog. Like, I just talk and talk and talk. And one of the things that's so lovely about Mike is truly how uncomfortable he was being on Mike, and his name is Mike, so that's doesn't even make sense. But and so I just, not to just immediately launch into this, but I'm a fan of the show, just like all of you who are listening. I'm such a fan, and I've been so honored and excited to get to be even a little part of the wonderful work that Bob and you all are doing, and Zach, and I was. Love Bob and Weave. So this to me is a dream come true. It gives me the opportunity to dig deeper into a community of people that I'm so inspired by and that I love being a part of. But I'm not Mike, and I feel terrible that you're going to hear me instead of him. So please know, at no time am I like, yeah, I guess it's pretty cool. I guess I'm the new Mike. I do not feel that way at all. Yeah. But if there's anything I can bring to the table and represent everybody like me who loves the show and actually loves hearing Bob cry, Zap just logged off. Okay, good. No, I was like, I'm clear. Zap's over it. he's back. Anyway, I will do my very best to represent us all as the Truth and Justice Army, and certainly will never take for granted that my voice will be where Mike's voice used to be. I'm not taking that for granted for a second.
And as I'm sitting here thinking that, of course, the one week that I have to edit the follow-up because Mike's on vacation, I shit up 10 minutes of audio trying to get out 2 minutes of information. So the audio listeners may just get it all, and that'll just be what it is. We'll see how it goes. But, Jana, I'm super excited and super appreciative of you joining us. And Zach, of course, will be around. We'll probably be doing more since we have to. We do these YouTube lives because it's super easy when we're on Zoom to make that connection and do it. And the listeners, you guys seem to enjoy doing it that way. Plus Zach's got a kind of a drive to get down here to record it. So we may, once Janet is fully doing it after next week, we may just start doing these remote YouTube lives every week. So let us know on social media what you think about that. And with that being said, I think we can wrap this up. I think I'm emotionally exhausted enough at this point. But Janet, thank you so much for joining us and helping us out. And Zach, thank you so much for being here.
It's my pleasure, Bob, and new Mike.
Oh, no! Zap, how dare you, Zap? I'm furious.
So tune in next week. Tune in this weekend, of course, for the main episode. Next week for Mike's last follow-up. I'm sure there'll be tears there. I'm trying like hell to avoid that. And then it'll be the Zap and new Mike show after that. With that, we will see you guys later.
Thanks, everyone. And with...
Yeah, fucking see you later. Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production and is distributed by Wondery. Produced and edited by Mike Bussing, and all music for the show was created and composed by PutThemInASong.com. Our follow-up logo was created by Zach Weaver, and all of our font across all of our logos and banners were created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. You can find more of Tate's work on Etsy. Thank you to Katie Ross of CreatedInTandem.com for designing, creating, managing, and maintaining our website, Truth and Justice Pod, where you can view all photos and documents discussed in every episode. Thank you to our transcription team, Pamela Westby, Kathy McElhaney, Charlena White, Kaywood Yomnick, Ginger Fiola, Edith Swanneck, Lindsay Pease, and Jen Reese in Candela. And as always, thank you to all of you for all of your engagement and support. If you like the show and you'd like to support us, you can do so in a number of ways. To financially support the show, you can go to patreon.com/truthandjustice. On the Patreon page, you can pledge as little as $3 a month, and we also have reward levels. For just $5 per month, you get access to ad-free versions of all of our episodes and behind-the-scenes videos of the creation of our Friday follow-up episodes that include 10 to 30 minutes of pre-show bonus chat. Other reward levels include t-shirts, hats, and even the opportunity to co-host one of our Friday follow-up episodes. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. And lastly, you can always support us by supporting the companies that sponsor this program. If you have a new case you'd like us to consider for future seasons, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. And the most important thing that you can do is to engage in our investigations. You can keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. For all of you tweeters, you can connect with us on Twitter at @TruthJusticePod. To follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at @BobRuffTruth. Mike can be found at @MurbGaming, MurbGaming. And Zach can be found at @Z2TheQ. And don't forget that we always have our 24/7 voicemail line open for questions, comments, and tips on our cases. That phone number is 269-224-2833. However you do it, stay engaged, stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Mike Bussing.
This has been Truth and Justice.